Very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 5th of June, 2018, Tuesday. So we are now getting ready for puja. So let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja. Namo Bhansi Sajjaya Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sajjaya Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sajjaya Moni Pho. Namo Quan Sinh Pusa. Namo Quan Sinh Pusa. Namo Quan Sinh Pusa. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Mila Pho, Namo Mila Pho, Namo Pusien Pusa, Namo Pusien Pusa, Namo Pusien Pusa, Namo Pho Pusa, Namo Pho Pusa, Namo Pho Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you can be seated. Then turn to page 1 of the chanting book. We will do the Vandana. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Now we are chandapadipa puja, offering of light. Ganna sarapaditena Dipena tamadangsina Tiloka dipang sambuddhang Pujayami tamonudang Ganda sambarayutena Dupenahang suganghina Pujaye pujaniyangthang Puja bhajana mutamang Vanna Ganda Guno Petang Etang Kusuma Santatin Pujayami Munindasa Siri Pada Sarorohe Pujemi Buddhang Kusumena Nena Punnena Chitena Chahotu Mokang Pupang Milayati Yata Idang Me Kayo Tata Yati Vinasa Bhavang Adivase Tuno Bante Paniyang Parikapitang Anukampang Upadaya Patigan Hatu Mutamang Adivase Tuno Bante Pale Parikapitang Anukampang Upadaya Patigan Hatu Mutamang Adivase Tuno Bante Bojanang Parikapitang Anukampang Upadaya Patigan Hatu Mutamang. Now we are chant the the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. Understanding the significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to obtain the path and fruition soonest possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the born-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Triple Gem. Buddhang pujami. Dhammang pujami. Sanghang pujami. Okay, you all can be seated, then we can have our half an hour silent meditation. We are off the light. affects body and mind. Always remember the four support. Relax, maintain awareness. Then 24-hour means continuous awareness. Then if you already very stable in your city, you can just relax and silent everything and allow the nature to meditate. Just relax, silent. The last support is trust. Trust your nature to do the meditation on its own. No need to interfere with the thought process. So no mind if is involved. Okay, I will ring the bell after about 30 minutes. Then for the time being, you can just continue your meditation. For those of you who already know how to meditate, you just relax and silent. Then use the silent mind to develop awareness of whatever that is going on within your form and mind. You can anchor the awareness to your breathing if you already have the skill, or you can even rest it around your heart area, silent everything and just feel. Then you will detect the silent awareness or silent mind that is quite stable without thought. You will detect whatever vibration that is around your heart area, even the heartbeat and all those things. You just stay with it, allow it to be relaxed into it. Then sooner or later, it will detect on its own, the gateway. Okay. Okay. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have enough, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Then turn to page 6. We shall chant the invocation to the devas. In this universe, in the entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta Chakawalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Sattama Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokkadam Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Iti Peso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho Vijja Charana Sampanno Sugato Loka Vidu Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pachatang Veditabo Vinohiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Ujjupatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Samichipatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Yadidang Chattari Purisa Yukani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savakasango Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaniyo Anutarang Punyaketa Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Tripaja. Vedang Pujayami. Damang Pujayami. Sanghang Pujayami. Then there's a sheet of notes in front of you. Anybody don't have, you can collect from me. We will go through this note. This is the previous Sunday, Six Patriarch Sutta, Lesson 17, short note, dated 27 of May, 2018. I had shared it with the Thursday class last week. So now we are going to do it for the Tuesday class. For those who have, I think, listened to the recording, you will be able to understand it more clearly now, a lot easier. These notes are very good. You should pay attention, because this one is the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, Chapter 10, the last chapter. These are the final instructions given by Hui Ning. Note 1. The Self Nature is the Oneness Nature. It's also the source of everything. Then, under the poem by Hui Ning, he did mention that this true nature, originally, there is nothing. Therefore, where can the dust alight? So, Sun Siu did not understand the true mind. He mistaken the mundane mind for the true mind. That's why, under his poem, he said, the body is like a bohi tree. Then the mind is like a mirror bright on the stand. That is the mundane mind. Then because he has the mundane mind, he created duality, wholesome and unwholesome. Then he defined the dust. Not two. Dust here means defilement. Do you have enough? Don't have that? Take from there. The plastic. That one, the last one also. Okay. Anybody don't have? The notes? Dust here means defilement or unwholesome mind states. It arises because of duality created by the mundane mind via words, concepts, and ideas. The mundane mind creates the duality of good and bad, wholesome and unwholesome, right and wrong, etc. It is therefore impossible to then use the mundane mind to do away with such duality, because the mundane mind is fighting its own creation, which always comes together as a pair. Meaning, if one does not create, then things are just the way they are. No right, no wrong, and no good, and no bad. Then the third note is, if the mundane mind does not create duality via delusion, then the true mind can see things as they are. This one is easy to understand. Because when there is no more delusion, the mundane mind does not react or stir upon sense experience, upon moment of sense experience. When you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, or tactically feel something, or think of something through mind, recalling through memory, it will not stir if there is no delusion. Stir means your mind react to sense experience. Then this mind that is silent, aware, can awaken, can see things as they are. Note 4. We must learn to use the mundane mind and yet not deceived by it. So this I explained many times already. This human being or form of mind is karmically conditioned through our karmic nature for us to come to this existential world. So it's for us to use, and it's not what you think, because it is impermanent, leading to suffering. Therefore, it is non-self, empty. So this part is very important. So the mundane mind is not you. The mundane mind is not real. the mandema is dependent originating condition arising. Mm. So learn to use it. It's a tool to serve you. Then point number 5, do not waste time on tinted merits. Instead, work towards awakening via the silent mind. Because no amount of merits can give rise to wisdom. Then story of Bodhidharma transmitting the Dharma from India to China. You want to know more, you listen to the Sunday recording. Then enlightenment is to awaken to the self nature or true nature. It's not about just sitting without understanding. This one I have elaborated on that Sunday talk too, and also the Thursday talk. Then number 8 is very interesting. I sent out a video today on Bodhidharma. I think 4 of the monks, one of them was the abbot, they went in and meditated. It's supposed to be a 3-day, 3-night meditation, silent meditation. Then Bodhidharma also joined them. Then inside there, if you have seen the video, you will understand. Okay, anyway, you go and look at the video, then you will understand. I will just read to you. So Bodhidharma said, if you just sit without understanding, you cannot awaken to the way. You cannot realize the true Dhamma. So the monk asked him, what do you mean? He said, because he was actually using the glassware from the cup to make some sound on the table. Then the monk asked him, what are you doing? Because everybody defaulted on the rules because they all said something except Bodhidharma. He created the sound. Then he asked them back, because they asked him, what are you doing? He asked them back, what are you doing? They said they are sitting in meditation, developing Zen meditation to awaken, to become enlightened. Then he said, likewise, he is grinding the glassware to make it into a mirror. So the monks and the abbot laughed at him, say, how can this glassware become a mirror? Then he told them, by sitting, likewise by sitting, how can you awaken and realize the true Dhamma? Then they look at him. They say, if not by sitting, then what must we do? Then he said, Zen got no fixed technique or method. Zen is an understanding. Zen is free from posture, free from rigid doing without understanding. Then one of the monks asked back, in that case, how should we meditate? How should we really do it? He said, start from basic. They were shocked. They don't know what is it. He said, start from basic. Then Bodhidharma explained, start from basic means start from the mind. You must first understand what is this mind. So there are 2 aspects to the mind. So the first aspect is the mundane mind, is it? Like Sakyamuni Buddha explained, mind is a forerunner of all things, mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So all of duality, all of wholesome, unwholesome, karmic, good or negative karma, positive or negative karma, arise following the arising of this mundane mind. So the user of mind is very important. So he said, if this very basic understanding of your mind also you don't understand, you cannot start meditation. So point number 8 is just a summary. So I mentioned here, you have to start from basic. That is understanding that everything arises from that self nature, including the mundane mind. For mind is the forerunner of all things. When mind arises, everything arises. Whether something is wholesome or unwholesome, which is duality, they all arise from the mundane mind, depending on your understanding. If there is no understanding, avijja, then you will arise all the wrong thought, the unwholesome thought. Then note number 9. There is a nature that is independent of thinking. All beings are connected to the self nature, which is never born. Hence, it doesn't get sick, get old or die, for this is the eternal nature. So this awareness within the true mind, it is independent of condition. That's why this one is independent of your thought process. It don't need a sense data. It don't need a consciousness to arise. It has this inherent ability to be aware. That's why it can be aware of silence, which is without vibration, without sense data, nothing. When one understands this, one will be able to cultivate and meditate accordingly. If one does not understand, then one is just following instruction blindly. Meditation is not about whether one is doing it right or wrong, but one must understand what one is doing in the name of meditation or cultivation. The mundane mind needs to be trained via mindfulness to realize the true mind or the silent mind. Not until there is mindfulness, there is no real meditation leading to wisdom. Just relax and be aware or silent. Develop the 5 spiritual faculties to overcome the 5 mental hindrances first. If there is still thinking, it's because sati is lacking and the untrained mind is heedless. Accept this reality and just be aware. No need to do anything. Means the untrained mind is heedless. That's it. So accept it. So let it think. Let it arise the thought. Then silent. Don't do anything. Then like the block cut passing through the pool of water analogy. When Sakyamuni Buddha asked Ananda to collect some water sample for him. You remember initially the block cut keep on stirring the pool of water. So he came back twice. He told the Buddha, I can't get any water for you because of those blockads stirring it and making it milky. Then the third time he was surprised. The water was clear, so he was able to bring it back to the Buddha. Then the Buddha asked Ananda, what did you learn? Ananda couldn't understand. So he told Ananda, he said, the third time you are able to get the clear water. Why? Because there is no passing of blokka to stir the pool of water. That's why if you don't do anything, if you don't stir the mind, which is the mundane mind, then it will return to its original state of tranquility, stillness, which is the original nature of mind before the stirring, before the reaction, before the arising of consciousness. So all this, what they call aggregates of mind, like your feeling, that condition, craving, reaction of mind, creating duality through sankhara. All this, they are the mundane mind. They are dependent originating, condition arising. This is not your true mind. So always remember, when you meditate, just relax, silent. Then you don't give it any more thought energy. Don't try to know. Don't try to do anything. Just relax and silent. Maintain awareness. Then the silent mind will come back. Whatever stirring due to your earlier heedlessness and delusion, they will slow down on their own. Then after a while, you will experience that silence, that stillness. That is your true mind. You're supposed to realize that. That's why meditation is very simple when you understand. When you can start from basic, following the mind and understand what this mind is all about. And the 2 aspects of mind. Then number 10, note number 10. When one understands this, one will be able to cultivate and meditate accordingly. If one does not understand, then one will just follow instruction blindly. Oh, we have gone through one. So meditation is not about whether one is doing it right or wrong, but one must understand what one is doing in the name of meditation or cultivation. So if you don't understand what you are doing, you cannot progress. Understanding means you know you have these two minds. The mundane mind is the conditioned arising mind, the false mind. And this one is dependent originating, conditioned arising, like anger, hatred, fear, worry, anxiety. They are not inherent in you. They arise because of wrong view of your reaction and stirring. So when it arises, be aware, silent, stay with it, and you assist. That's why I don't have to do anything. Yeah. So this understanding is very important. And you can realize that that true mind, which is the unconditioned, that one can develop wisdom. That one can awaken, can see things as they are, can insight into phenomena, can awaken to the three universal characteristics. That's why without mindfulness, without the silent mind, you cannot meditate. You cannot realize the truth, which is beyond thought, beyond mind. So all this, you look through the Heart Sutta, they are all there. So this one is a very good summary of all the cultivation that you need to understand. Number 11, the mundane mind needs to be trained via mindfulness to realize the silent mind or the true mind. This is basic. If you cannot do this, you cannot develop the meditation. Not until there is mindfulness, there is no real meditation leading to wisdom. So again, the same. Just relax and be aware or silent. Develop the five spiritual faculty to overcome the five mental hindrances first. If there is still thinking, it's because sati is lacking and the untrained mind is heedless. Accept it and just be aware. Oh, just now we were here. Okay. 14. Use the heart means aware from within. When you are centered at the heart area, because that is where you return your awareness to your heart. Use the heart awareness within to be aware of external things. Observe without views and opinion and thoughts. Learn to see things as they are. Be with the moment in silent awareness. See things as they are means not conditioned by your memory, your views, your opinion, and your conditioning. Just the direct seeing before the perception, before the stirring of the mind and the reaction. Don't be too eager to know about one's progress, because that is a form of craving. If you have cultivated correctly, then condition will unfold by themselves naturally. In the midst of life, cultivate the daily mindfulness. That is, learn to see the physical, mental, and nature's flow within nature. If there is mindfulness, thought will not arise. But when thought do arise, just be aware and do not allow it to continue or proliferate into a chain of heedless thinking. This is how you develop the daily mindfulness. So without mindfulness, you will be heedless. You will think a lot. If there is mindfulness, thought will not arise. But when thought do arise, don't worry. Just let it be and be aware. And do not allow it to continue to proliferate into a chain of heedless thinking. Means do not allow the thinking to continue. Because when you are not aware, you become heedless. You are lost in thought. Your mind continuously through habitual tendency creates story. Next page, number 17. Thinking ahead while doing our intended bodily action and movements is not being mindful at all. Try doing one thing at a time with full awareness. This is most important if you want to do daily mindfulness. One thing at a time. It's either you are aware or you are lost in thought. Either way. So if you are not aware within the moment to do that thing, you are lost in thought. You are thinking. That's why a lot of people think a lot. acting ahead. They are never with the moment. Be with the moment in silent awareness more and more, so that this heedless thinking will be reduced. Learn to live life instead of always thinking, planning, and worrying about life. That's the reason why the Buddha say, anchor your mind to your kaya. When you are with your kaya, you are in the present moment awareness, where your kaya is always within the moment. Your action, your physical movement, your breath, everything, when you are aware of it, is always within the moment. There is no thought. So kaya nupassana is the very, very basic and most important training to develop mindfulness, to be with the moment. Then note 18. Try not to accumulate via memory so that the brain has space, especially those psychological memories like your fear, worry, anxiety, phobia, scars of memory, insecurity, etc. Instead, jot them down so as to be free from the need to use memory. No thoughts means no worry, no fear, no anxiety, etc. Yeah. So this understanding is very important. Because as we all know, you accumulate too much of this psychological memory in your brain, what will happen? You will create a lot of thinking. Why? Because thought is respond to? Thought is respond to what? Memories. So the more memory you keep, the more thought you create. Without thought, like the baby, newborn, there is, without memory, like the newborn baby, there is no thought. It's just aware. That's why they have pure perception. They can see things as they are. They are not so complicated like human beings. They don't have all those memory, the scars of memory, the psychological memory. They don't even have words, concept, idea. That's why their brains are very, very fresh. Very, very simple. Means there is space. They do not accumulate. Where they have yet to be conditioned. Then note 19. Tranquility, silence, and the clarity of mind lead us to see things as they are, leading to wisdom. So you must have the silent mind in stillness, mind in sati. So when that mind is silent and aware, there is clarity. That's why it can see things as they are. It can awaken. It can insight into phenomena. Then note 20. When there is awakening, wisdom that arises will be connected to the form and mind. The form and mind of the human being is no longer deluded. Then one can say it has become enlightened. However, this form and mind is not you, and is still subject to the law of karma. This must be understood so that one can cultivate correctly, so that you are not deluded, not deceived. Then note 21. Enlightenment has nothing to do with whether one has completely exhausted one's bad karma or not. So this is because of ancient India, the wrong view. Then note 22, very important. The two aspects of middle path. First aspect is to avoid the two extremes of self-mortification and sensual indulgence. And the second aspect is to transcend duality via wisdom. Duality is to be understood, for duality pertains to the conditioned world. So this one I have explained at the Sunday class. You go and listen. Ignorance leads to heedless thinking. That's why the first two links, avijja paccaya sankhara. Be aware of this mental activity of avijja paccaya sankhara via mindfulness to develop the wisdom to straighten one's view, so that one can weaken such heedless thinking. So when your avijja or ignorance become less and less, sankhara become less and less. That's why your mandi mind become more and more quiet, more and more peaceful, more and more aware. Because you have straightened your view. you no longer react and stir. Yeah. You can accept the reality of the moment. You know all these are not real. The phenomenal world of consciousness is impermanent, lead to suffering when you grasp and cling. So when you don't cling, don't grasp, you are at peace. That's why you are silent. You are most of the time just aware. You will not be like before, heedlessly kepo, thinking, commenting, reacting. Then note 24. The real meditation will always bring one back to the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So this one we have gone through many times. Huh? Always reflect and contemplate until the Dhamma is very, very clear. The first and second Noble Truth are the mundane aspect of the Four Noble Truths. The first Noble Truth explains the reality of life and existence. That is the eight reality leading to suffering if one lacks wisdom. The prevalence of suffering if one confronts them without proper understanding. Then second Noble Truth is the cause of arising of suffering. The cause is craving, born of delusion. Then the third Noble Truth, which is the supramundane understanding. The Buddha says suffering need not be, for Nibbana, the unconditioned, can be realized in the here and the now. Then the fourth Noble Truth is regarding the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, means mundane cultivation leading to the realization of the enlightenment or the supramundane. Then there's a question by Sister Adelaide, which is very good. You should listen to the recording. Can Brother Teo explain how we can overcome or transcend duality in cultivation? So this one is a very good question. Where we talk about mundane mind creating duality, then how can you overcome duality in cultivation? Then like the Buddha said in the teaching, he said, imas means sati, idang hoti. When this arise, that arise. That is what duality is about. Yin yang is all about. When this arise means when you arise a thought to classify this as wholesome, then whatever that is not this one, the opposite will arise, unwholesome. When you create a standard of good, whatever that is not of this standard become the opposite, bad. That's why duality come in pair. When you create one side, the other side appears. So the Buddha is very wise. He said, when this arise, that arise. That's why imas means sati idang hoti. Then he said, when this ceases, when you don't create anything, that ceases. Imas means asati idang arhoti. Very clear. That's why Hui Ling say, don't create. Originally there was nothing. Then where can the dust alight? You don't even have to create dust. Dust come from duality. Yeah. So this one is a very important understanding. That's why that day I explained to Adeline and the rest. I said duality is to be understood. You cannot like those foolish people try to meditate to overcome duality. You know what they teach you? They teach you practice letting go. Practice seeing beyond duality. You cannot practice, understand? How can you practice? Practice will not bring about enlightenment. Practice is thought-based, repetitive. How can you practice letting go? Without wisdom, you cannot let go, understand? Without wisdom, you cannot understand why duality trap you. That's why you need wisdom. So wisdom comes from understanding. Understanding means like the Buddha say, the conditioned world is like that. The conditioned world is a world of duality. Because the conditioned world is the world of the mundane mind. The world of consciousness created by the mundane mind. That's why the whole phenomenal world of consciousness come from the mundane mind. So what happened? if you come into this existential world through a form and mind, then you must understand duality exists in the conditioned world. Because the mundane mind through delusion will create duality. So you have to have the understanding. So duality is to be understood. Understood means I accept the reality that this conditioned world is with duality. Then I got no problem with duality. It's just like the three types of seeing, you remember? The first type of seeing, kan san si san, that is the mundane seeing. Means mundane people see like that. See with words and concept. You point towards the mountain, he said, yeah, this is mountain. But when you have the silent mind, when you can develop the direct seeing, then when you see things as they are, without the words and the concept and the perception, then you realize that thing is just that thing. No word, no description. That's why, kan san, pu si san. There is no concept of mountain at all. It's the direct seeing, the pure perception. Then the third phase is seeing the truth, the reality. Seeing as they are. As they are means what? I didn't even want to say this is mountain or not mountain. Understand or not? If that guy come along with mundane seeing, he said mountain. Yes, mountain. If the other guy with the direct seeing say not mountain, yes, not mountain. Well, I see things as they are. Through suchness, through wisdom. So wisdom is to be understood. Oh, sorry. Duality is to be understood. So when I understand what is duality, then duality cannot deceive this mundane mind anymore. You understand? Whereas the mundane mind realizes itself. If I don't create, this duality will not arise. But duality will always arise because the mundane mind within the conditioned world of the living beings who are not enlightened, they will use this duality to describe things, to do things. That's why you have to use this mundane mind and yet not be deceived by it. It's just like this form of mind. You don't have to worry about you getting old, getting sick and die. But this is not you. This is karmically conditioned out for you to come to this existential world to use. And this one is impermanent. Not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why it is non-self. Anatta. Empty. Because it's all dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of phenomenon, no reality. Then as real as it can be, it's only that moment when it arises. Then the next moment, split second, is gone, dead and gone. Then moment to moment, life passes by. What are you doing? There is no reality at all. Whatever that is arising within the moment, that is the only reality. We have gone through the three period of time. Huh? The whole of existence can be related to time. So time, we can define the whole spectrum, past, present, and future. Then we can analyze time. We can go into it. The past is already gone, no more reality. Future yet to come. So the present moment is the highest in life. So what is the reality? Moment to moment, the reality arises. But how stable is the moment? Split second is dead and gone. Split second is dead and gone. That's why you can only hold it in the field of thought through memory. That's why there is this famous Mandarin song, 往事只能回味. Then, time, wait for no man. 时光一去永不回. So all this, you can realize them in your daily life, in your meditative training. So duality, you cannot use a concept or idea or knowledge to try to overcome. You cannot try to like repeat what I say. Like Brother Theo say, see things as they are. Don't perceive, don't interpret, don't create duality. If you do that, you are not going to benefit. You are not going to progress at all. Well, that is using knowledge, the mundane mind. But when you awaken through the silent mind, you realize that these are all impermanent, lead to suffering, and because they are impermanent, it's not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can cling and you can hold. Then immediately you understand that this is not real. The whole phenomenal world is not real. That's why there is no mark of a self, no mark of living being, no mark of Dhamma, no mark of any reality within the existential world. But within its existential world, there is such thing as life, there is such thing as law of karma. That's why you must understand both the ultimate truth and the existential truth. Existential truth is Dhamma. The ultimate truth is the penetrative awakening. The awakening comes from following the guideline given in the Dhamma. That's why the Tipitaka or the teaching, the Dhamma, points towards the truth. The teaching is not the truth. You understand? The teaching points towards the truth. You have to realize that truth, which is spoken in the teaching. So do not be deluded by the words. Do not be rigid. So you need to silence and awaken. The moment you awaken, you realize all these are not real. Like the Buddha said, you cannot attach, you cannot cling, you cannot hold, because they don't exist. He know you, he know me. But with delusion, the living being cling and grasps, because they have been using this form and mind since birth until now for so long. And they will never believe it's not them. And you tell them this is not you, not real. They say, you really crazy. How can you say this is not me? This is all of me. Because if you don't meditate to awaken, the delusion is there. The self-delusion is so strong. The grasping is so strong. Where they cannot silence. They cannot realize the true mind. So the mundane mind is actively conditioning them to grasp, to cling, and to hold. So this is the aspect of the teaching that you need to awaken to. Otherwise, it's not easy. Huh? Then I read on. Yeah. So that is number 30, yeah, the question by Sister Adeline. Yeah. So always remember wisdom free. So wisdom free means when you can really see things as they are, like I have already shared with you all. Eh? The world is the world. People are just the way they are. Like the Buddha said, whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. So this is the reality. It cannot be otherwise. Yeah. So when we understand that, then we can accept the reality of the moment. Which means we will not stir our mind and react. Yeah. We can be with the moment at peace. We are conditioned like that. Things will be like that. Then human being is just the way they are. Deluded being will do deluded thing. Angry person will do angry thing. Selfish people will do selfish thing. They are just the way they are. Then the world is the world. We are conditioned like that. Things will be like that. So you are always at peace. So this wisdom is very important. And this is what the Buddha called Yoniso Manasikara. Wise attention at the moment of sense experience. So without this wisdom, you cannot cope with life. That's why the Buddha said, when you have this wisdom, Yoniso Manasikara, at the moment of sense experience, your mind will not stir, your mind will not react. That wisdom will enable you to be at peace. And that is the true cultivation, the true understanding. Not to use knowledge to try to become non-duality. That is thought-based, knowledge-based. Non-duality is to be understood. The moment I didn't create, then there is no right, no wrong. Then he is just the way he is. You understand? Wrong according to you. But according to him, because he is deluded, he will do such thing. That's why to him, it's right. But when you have the third level of seeing, when you see things as they are, neither right or wrong. Understand? He is just the way he is. Finish. That's why the Buddha said, seeing things as they are. Not according to your views, opinion and conditioning. And it's no more relative truth. It's ultimate truth. Your relative truth is the mundane mind within the conditioned world. Relative. According to who? Right according to who? Good according to who? So all this you will understand. That's why you were awakened. So that question by Adeline was very good. So it summarized to you the cultivation, how to develop wisdom to awaken. Yeah. That's why you need to contemplate, reflect. You remember the five ways to overcome unwholesome thought? Third way is just aware, like the block card going through the pool of water. If you don't stir, it will settle down and it will realize its original true mind or true state, true nature, which is stillness, awareness, peaceful before the stirring. Yeah. That is your original state of the true mind, the true nature. That's why that nature is already silent, aware. You don't have to practice to be mindful, aware. The moment you don't think, the silent mind, the mundane mind sees, the silent mind will appear, the true mind. The true mind is eternally there. Never, never a part of your nature. That's why don't have to practice to be mindful, to be aware. The moment you are without thought, you're already aware. So awareness is all the time there. So that is a very important understanding. So when you understand that, your meditation becomes different. You don't have to do all those things anymore. That's how you can transcend duality. Well, this wisdom at the moment of sense experience will make you peaceful, aware, because you can accept the reality of the moment. Then it does not stir, does not react. That's why you are at peace. There is clarity, there is awareness, there is understanding. The mind transcends reality. Then you can live life, yeah? Beautifully. Yeah. You can live the noble life of a true awakened being. Mm. So then, within the moment, you can experience all of the beauty and wonders of life, because it is just that moment. It's pure silent awareness to experience the pristine beauty and wonders of life. Without thought, it's so beautiful. That consciousness is so clear. That's why without thought, there is no of this negativity of mind state. Fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, insecurity, all this does not arise. Well, this arises through thought, through reaction of mind, through stirring. When you lack wisdom, the mind will be caught in duality, in emotion, in fear. So all this will become clear to you when you develop the silent mind to meditate, to awaken. So wisdom is very important. Awakening to the three universal characteristics of nature is most important. That's why you need daily mindfulness. You need a silent mind. Okay? Then the next question is also very beautiful. The next question is by Sister Engby. He said, according to Brother Theo, noble eightfold path still have duality, right? Reason why Brother Theo said in the last Tuesday and Thursday classes that the fourth noble truth is about cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path, which is mundane cultivation, leading to the supramundane, which is the realization of Nibbana. Can Brother Theo explain this further? This is very important, because the Buddha, under the fourth noble truth, he said there is a Noble Eightfold Path. If you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. And you meditate to become enlightened. True or not? Yeah? True or not? When you are enlightened, you will be free from all suffering, isn't it? That's why Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation. When you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. It will lead to the enlightenment in the here and the now. This Noble Eightfold Path has duality, isn't it? The first path factor is what? Huh? Samadhi is what? Noble Eightfold. Ah, right view. That's why you still got right and wrong, isn't it? Right and wrong view. Still got duality, isn't it? Then the next path factor is what? Right view leading to? Ah, right thought, right speech. That's why I still got right and wrong. This is still within duality, understand or not?
But why did you cultivate this? Because the Buddha knew this mundane mind need wisdom, need understanding. That's why you need to root it out. All this negativity, wrong view, you need to straighten your view. That's why the right view comes about. So from mundane cultivation, you will cultivate to realize the supramundane. And the realization is an insight. It's not a practice. Do you understand? You cannot practice to be wise. If the Buddha can make you wise, he will 100% out of love and compassion make you wise. Because wisdom cannot be given. And he cannot teach you how to practice to become enlightened. He can only show you the way, explain to you what this Dhamma is. Then you have to realize it yourself. You have to walk that path, cultivate it, and awaken. So, right view is very important. With the right view, it will condition your right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. When this is all in place, your karma will be taken care of. Do you understand? Yeah? Then there is no more negativity or karma. Then your mind is more at peace. Yeah? When you straighten your view, avijja paccaya saṅkhārā is less. You got less thinking. You got less suffering or problem because your karmic is being taken care of. So it's like the five precepts. If you take care of your five precepts, you don't kill, you don't harm, you don't commit sexual misconduct, you don't lie, you don't deceive, then you don't partake in intoxicant drug that will cause your karmic downfall. What will happen is you will have less karmic negativity. Then you will have more clarity of mind, more good karmic nature to allow your mind to have more peace. That's why the Buddha say under the precept. You remember the precept? Precept is the source of what? The three types of thing that you will benefit from keeping your precept. Precept is the source of one. The first one is what? Spiritual happiness. Then after that is your spiritual wealth, source of spiritual wealth. Bhoga sampadan, you remember? The first one is spiritual happiness is called what already? What is that word already? There's a word. The last one is nibbuntiyanti, is source of peacefulness. Yeah, of mind. The first one is what already? Sukang. Sukang means precept is the source of spiritual joy or happiness. Then after that is spiritual. What they call wealth. Then the last one is spiritual peacefulness of mind. So these three will allow you to meditate. If you don't keep your precept, you have a lot of karmic obstruction, karmic negativity. Your mind cannot become at peace. Your mind cannot have the silent ability to be silent. That's why you have to start with the cultivation of right view leading to right thought, right speech. So that all this will bring you back to focus. So that your mind, the mundane mind, is no longer like normal, heedless living being. Then all this will allow you to develop the 10 meritorious action that comes with the cultivation of the Buddha Dhamma. Yeah. So you can invoke power of merits for causes and conditions for you to awaken. So all this will help you. Then what you need to do is, when you make all this aspiration, it will bring forth the condition for you to develop mindfulness. For you to avoid the foolish, meet up with the wise, so that enlightenment, the here and the now, can be realized as soon as possible. So this Noble Eightfold Path is to help you to transform your life, to change your life for the better, to develop the wholesomeness of mind. That's why initially there is still duality, the four right efforts. There is still effort to abandon the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action that has arisen. Then the right effort to prevent from the arising. To prevent them from arising, you need wisdom. you need yoniso manasikara. Otherwise, you cannot stop it. That's why you need the fourth way. The third way is just aware, then it's silent. But you cannot use it in life. Because every time you got a problem, like you got anger, you got fear, you go and hike somewhere and meditate. I mean, you can clear it. But you have to come out into life again. Understand? Not? And you cannot be always running away to make your mind peaceful. You need to be at peace in the midst of life. So what the Buddha advises is, after the third way, when you understand that you don't have to do anything, you're just silent, then it will cease. But you haven't traced the origination factor. In the first place, why did you stir your mind? Why did you get angry? Why did you develop fear? That is the part which needs wisdom to overcome. So the Buddha said, trace the origination factor. How does anger come to be? How does fear come to be? How does the mind stir at the moment of sense experience? You realize it's from one of your senses, through consciousness. Either when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, tactile feel something, or think of something. Then you already trace the origination factor. So when I see something, then without wisdom, without the yoniso manasikara, my mind stir and react because of habitual tendency, because of mental hindrance. I lack the spiritual faculty. I lack the stability of mindfulness. I lack right view. So you need to straighten your view. You need to reflect, contemplate using the second turning. The next time when I see the same thing or similar thing, how can I not react? How can I not stir? How can I not allow the mind to have fear? This one needs wisdom. That's why you have to reflect and contemplate. Then you realize the Buddha said, learn to see things as they are. Learn to awaken to the three universal characteristics so that this wisdom becomes very stable. That's why my teacher said you have to reflect, contemplate until very, very clear. That is the meaning. So when you reflect and contemplate and develop the stability of wisdom until very, very clear, then you realize, like what I have shared with you all, because this is through my own cultivation from the past. That's how I can give you the answer straight away. So this is like a prototype. You don't need to go and do research to find out. Straight away you try it, apply it, use it. What did I tell you? People are just the way they are. The world is the world. Then like my teacher Achayantra said, only mighty nature rolling by. Nature's law, dependent originating, condition arising. Like the Buddha said, whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions behind. It cannot be otherwise. The reality is suchness. So everything is just the way it is, cannot be otherwise. So if I can have this understanding, then next time when I see something or hear something or think of something, my mind does not react like before. Well, this is the reality. He is just the way he is. The world is the world. Condition like that, things will be like that. Mighty nature rolling by, no reality. Then when you have this wisdom, the right view, then this is what yoniso manasikara is all about. When this has become stable, the next time you see the same thing or similar thing, or hear the same thing, or recall the similar thing, you realize your mind doesn't stir anymore. Your mind doesn't react like before. Then your mind can be at peace. And there is joy, there is understanding, there is love, there is metta, there is compassion. Then there is the understanding that, hey, no you, hey, no me. No mark of self-cultivating, no mark of living being. That's why there is no more of this, what they call, concept, idea, duality, all this collapse. That's why the phenomenal world failed to have impact on you, failed to deceive you. You can actually return all of this external phenomenal world, the creation, back to mind. You know, from mind it arises. So when you see them clearly, they are of the nature to arise because they are dependent originating, condition arising. And because it's dependent originating, condition arising, it's impermanent, not a permanent unchanging entity. And if it's already impermanent, following nature's condition, which is nature's law, I cannot want things my way. If I want things my way, I will suffer. You understand? When you cannot get what you want, you will suffer. And because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity, this nature will know that the form of mind is not me. Because this is impermanent. How can something which is impermanent be clung onto and hold onto and say, this is me, this is I? Where these are made of element, it will disperse. The consciousness will separate. When there is no more condition, it cannot arise. The mundane mind will cease. That's how all this understanding will develop into wisdom. And this wisdom connected to the form and mind will make the form and mind enlightened. But this form and mind is not you. That's why you can make use of it to live life, to develop the understanding of life. Then you must always remember that this form and mind is subject to the law of karma. Even though you have the ultimate truth, even though you know, he know you, he know me, but the law of karma applied to the form and mind means within the existential world, there is this law of karma that recognizes the form and mind as an individual. Do you understand? To the law of karma is real. It recognizes relationship. There is such thing as you, a father, a mother, or a fellow living being doing all this. That's why karma exists. But these are all within the nature's law, the karmic nature. And this karmic nature is not a being, understand? It's the summation of all the karmic things that become one nature. So all this understanding you need to develop through the cultivation. Then when you have this complete understanding, your form and mind awaken, become different. And this wisdom connector is no longer deluded. That's why this form and mind can never, never suffer anymore. Can never, never be deceived by the phenomenal world. It is just the way it is. And this one just manifests based on wisdom, based on understanding. Then there is no more avijja to cling, to grasp, and to be afflicted. Okay, then the last one is very good. The question by Sister Lee. What does one need to do once the silent mind cultivation has been developed? So this one is very important. Once you have reached the ability to be silent, then like what I always share with you all, don't do anything. Allow that silence to stabilize. Then until the mind enters sati. When you continue to relax into it and silent, then this mind will go through the transformation. Initially, it is not stable. It's just silent, maybe for the moment, where you decondition the heedless thinking. Then, at that moment, there is silence. There is awareness. But this awareness is not stable. So that's why you have to anchor it to an object of meditation or to kaya nupasana, the four posture and all those things, to stabilize it. So when the sati stabilizes, this mind becomes different. This mind will experience, like you do anapanasati or daily mindfulness, it will experience initially a type of calmness, peacefulness. You call it piti. And piti need not be always in the sitting posture. No. Of course, sitting posture easier to realize it, easier to achieve, because there is nothing to disturb you. But when your mindfulness becomes continuous in the daily life, it's just like anapanasati. When your mindfulness of the in and out breath becomes continuous, then you will experience a type of calmness called piti. Piti will arise. Spiritual calmness, spiritual rupture. So when piti arises, this is the beginning of meditation. It's an enlightened factor. It will make you feel good, feel calm, feel peaceful, aware. Then you continue to relax into it. It will become more and more refined. Then you will experience the more refined peace called sukha. the mind become blissful, really blissful.
Yeah.
Then when you experience this sukhang, you don't attach, you don't cling, you continue to relax into it and silent and do your daily mindfulness, bowing or whatever, or even chanting and all those things. Then until your daily mindfulness become very stable, then you silence your mind completely. Then this mind will reach what they call tranquility or stillness of mind. We call it pasati. Pasati is the tranquility of mind, stillness of mind. Means this mind is no longer moving. It's tranquil, still. This is the silent mind. This is the mind that enters sati. And this is the mind that can awaken the phenomena, that can develop the direct seeing. And this is an enlightenment factor. The sipasati is very important, the silent mind. And this will take you to your true nature, to realize your true mind. When you can be stable, very, very stable, until that stillness is so stable. You see, this stillness is not the one-pointedness energy field one. This stillness is born of a free mind, with wisdom, with understanding. It's just a mind that is without thought. It's just aware. And no need anything to hold it. No need energy field. No need absorption. No need concentration. No need one-pointedness. It's just naturally aware. That is the real mindfulness. You have to develop until throughout the day, more or less, you are aware, fully aware. Then you start to see a lot of things. That's why Miss Lee asked, when you have the ability to reach that silent mind state, what must you do? It's not a question of what must you do. It's a question of you must know what you are doing in the name of meditation. You are training this mundane mind so that it is not heedless. So that this mundane mind can cease. And when the mundane mind cease, does not stir and react and come out, does not create, the true mind will appear. That's why within the stillness, the tranquility, the awareness when you meditate in the form of posture, you will come to realize that true mind. And that one is so sensitive, so mindful, so aware, can be aware of so many things, so subtle. The subtle defilement behind, through the back door, everything it can see, it can be aware. And it can understand many things. It's very sensitive. It can feel many things. Yeah. So all this is part and parcel of the cultivation. When you have this understanding, your cultivation will become different. And it will reach that stability of mindfulness to enable you to have this type of mind. They call it the silent mind, the heedful mind. Heedful mind means constantly aware, ever mindful to cultivate noble eightfold path throughout the day. Yeah. And this is what heedfulness is all about. Apamada, apamadena, sambadeta. That's why the Buddha's advice before his parinibbana is strive on with heedfulness. You have to develop this heedfulness. The moment you are heedful, the Buddha said, you are destined for enlightenment. Where the heedful never die, the Buddha said. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas if you don't train your mind and develop this stability of mindfulness leading to heedfulness, the Buddha said, the heedless are as if dead. And heedlessness is the path to the dead. You don't stand a chance. That's why Dhammapada verse 21 is very clear. Then 22, 23 complement verse 21. Yeah. Then verse 22 say, the wise one distinctly understanding the significance of heedfulness, they were determined on heedfulness. And when they do that, they will realize they will rejoice in the realm of the Aryas, the enlightened being. Yeah. Then verse 23 confirm everything. The Buddha said, the constantly meditative, ever mindful, and steadfast one, they will realize the supreme, born free, Nibbana. Constantly meditative means constantly cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. Then ever mindful means your stability of mindfulness is very stable throughout the day. And you hold on to these two cultivations steadfastly, you will realize the enlightenment, supreme bond-free enlightenment. So basically, this is the whole of cultivation that you need to understand. That's why that day the condition was very beautiful. The three questions asked by them all fall into place. You go back and listen to the Sunday sharing, it's very good. Even the Thursday class sharing is also very good. Okay, any question? Anybody got any question? Don't have? Don't have, then we can finish off our balance of chapter. I think it's chapter 16. Okay, page 320. Yeah, chapter 17, page 320. These truths are in Pali termed Arya Satchani. They are so called because they are discovered by the great Arya, the Buddha, who was far removed from passion. The first noble truth deals with dukkha, which for need of a better English equivalent is rendered by suffering or sorrow. As a feeling, dukkha means that which is difficult to endure. As an abstract truth, dukkha is used in the sense of contemptible and emptiness. The world rests on suffering, hence it is contemptible. The world is devoid of any reality, hence it is empty and void. So this one is very important. Dukkha therefore means contemptible void. Then the average man are only surface seer, and Arya see things as they truly are, or they see things as they are. So this one is very important. Suchness, seeing the truth. To an Arya, all life is suffering, and he finds no real happiness in this world, which deceives mankind with illusionary pleasure. So this one we need to be careful, because if you take it literally, you will become like affected by the duality. Because here the initial statement is not so correct. To an Arya, all life is suffering. This one is wrong. That's why the Buddha says suffering need not be when you have the wisdom. The third noble truth. Enlightenment in the here and the now is possible, can be realized. So it is not correct to say to an Arya, all life is suffering. Suffering is a universal characteristic, yes. Inherent in all things, provided you through delusion attach and cling. If you don't attach and cling, you can endure. You can just silent to endure, to understand, to allow things to be. There is no suffering. So that part too, correct. But the second part is correct. And he finds no real happiness in this world which deceive mankind with illusionary pleasure. This is true. Because the Buddha also mentioned all of sensual pleasure is a prelude to suffering. Why? When you attach and cling to the sensual pleasure where you want it repeated and you want it to
you want to go through it again and again. Yeah. So when you cannot get what you want, finally it will lead to suffering. Yeah. So you need to develop the wisdom. Wisdom means what? If there is condition to have, it will arise. You understand? Then by all means, have it. But when there is no condition, don't crave. Don't desire. If you do that, that is delusion. And you will have problem. That's why you must have the wisdom to accord and flow. And understand condition deeply. Material happiness is merely the gratification of some desire. No sooner is the desired thing gained than it begins to be scorned. In satire are all desire. This is very true. Desire cannot be satisfied. All are subject to birth and consequently to decay, disease, and finally death, marana. No one is exempted from these four inevitable causes of suffering. So here, the Buddha's teaching on the First Noble Truth, the first four reality, is not according to what this author described. Because this author take it to mean birth is suffering, decay is suffering, disease is suffering, death is suffering. This is for mundane people without wisdom. When you develop the wisdom, when you understand the ultimate truth, and you realize that this is not you, then there is no more delusion, no more clinging, no more grasping. Then this mind is free. It will transcend. It will liberate. That's why there is no more delusion to cause any suffering or misery. So this part, you just make a note. Because sometimes a lot of these authors, they tend to follow standard text that describe it this way. Impeded wish is also suffering. This is true. We do not wish to be associated with things or person we detest, nor do we wish to be separated from things or person we love. So this one is the other reality, separation from loved one and prized possession. Then our cherished desires are not, however, always gratifying. What we least expect or what we least desire is often thrusted on us. At times, such unexpected and unpleasant circumstances become so intolerable and painful that weak, ignorant folk are compelled to commit suicide, as if such an act would solve their problem. So here they qualify the word ignorant. So it's okay. Real happiness is found within and is not to be defined in terms of wealth, power, honor, or conquest. If such worldly possessions are forcibly or unjustly obtained, or are misdirected, or even view with attachment, they will be a source of pain and sorrow for the possessor. So this refers to attachment. Ordinarily, the enjoyment of sensual pleasure is the highest and only happiness to an average person. There is no doubt a momentary happiness in the anticipation, gratification, and recollection of such fleeting material pleasures, but they are illusionary and temporary. According to the Buddha, non-attachment, that's why viraga, viragata, or the transcending of materialistic pleasure is a greater bliss. In brief, this composite body itself is the cause of suffering. Actually, it's not the composite body. It is the grasping aggregate. When you grasp to the fine aggregate of form and mind, thinking that it's real, thinking that it's you, that is the cause of suffering. So this first noble truth of suffering, which depends on the so-called
being and various aspects of life is to be carefully examined. This examination leads to a proper understanding of oneself as one really is. That's why you need to know who are you, what are you. The cause of suffering is craving or attachment or tanha, which is the second noble truth. Then Dhammapada states, from craving spring greed. Ah, this one is a very important Dhammapada saying. Eh? Verse 216. From craving spring grief. From craving spring fear. For him who is wholly free from craving, there is no grief, much less fear. This is a very important Dhammapada saying. Eh? So always remember, the moment you have desire or craving or attachment or clinging of any kind, it will bring forth suffering. So grief, sorrow and lamentation, and fear, worry, anxiety will come about. So this is a very important understanding. This craving is a powerful mental force latent in all, and is the chief cause of most of the ills of life. It is this craving, gross or subtle, that leads to repeated birth in samsara and makes one cling to all forms of life. The grossest form of craving are attenuated on attaining Sakadagami, the second stage of sainthood, and are only eradicated on attaining Anagami, the third stage of sainthood. The subtle form of craving are eradicated on attaining arahantship. Yeah. Both suffering and craving can only be rooted out or eradicated by following the middle path enunciated by the Buddha himself and attaining the supreme bliss of Nibbana. The third noble truth is the complete cessation of suffering, which is Nibbana, the ultimate goal of all Buddhists. It is achieved by the total eradication of all form of craving. This Nibbana is to be comprehended by the mental eye by renouncing all internal attachment to the external phenomenal world. This Nibbana is to be comprehended by... Oh, sorry, we have read through. Huh? This truth has to be realized by developing the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the fourth noble truth. This unique path is the only straight route that leads to Nibbana. It avoids the two extremes of self-mortification and sensual indulgence that retards one's moral progress. It consists of the following eight path factors. Huh? Right thought or right understanding. Sorry, right view or right understanding, leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood or right living. Then right effort. Then right mindfulness and right samadhi. So you look at this four right effort. Eh? Here is called samavayama in Pali. So it's not the five spiritual faculty, virya. They call virya as effort. No, virya is not effort. Effort is vayama. Virya is a type of spiritual zeal or energy of tenacity to go this way. Yeah, because you see the importance. Yeah. But the right effort is different. Yeah. So right understanding is explained as the knowledge of the Four Noble Truths. In other words, it's the understanding of oneself as one really is. Because as the Rohitasa Sutta states, these truths are concerned with the one phantom length body of man. The keynote of Buddhism is this right understanding. Clear vision or right understanding leads to clear thinking. The second path factor within the Noble Eightfold Path is therefore Samasankappa, which is, they use another word here, right resolution, right aspiration. They do not convey the actual meaning of the Pali term. So right idea or right mindfulness come closer to the meaning. Right thought may be suggested as the nearest English equivalent. By samkappa is meant vitaka, mental states. which for want of a better rendering may be called initial application of thought. This important mental state eliminates wrong idea or notion and helps the other moral edges to be diverted to Nibbana. It is one's thought that either defiles or purifies a person. One's thought molds one's nature and controls one's destiny. Evil thought tends to debase one, just as good thought tends to elevate one. Sometimes a single thought can either destroy or save a world. So Sammasankappa serves the double purpose of eliminating evil thoughts and developing pure thought or wholesome thought. So right thought in this particular connection are threefold. They consist of thought of renunciation, nikkama, renunciation of worldly pleasure or selflessness, which is opposed to attachment, selfishness and self-possessiveness. Then the second one is avapada, loving kindness, goodwill or benevolence, which is opposed to hatred and ill will or aversion. And the last one is avihimsa, harmlessness or compassion, which is opposed to cruelty and callousness. These evil and good forces are latent in all, as long as we are worldlings, means not enlightened. This evil force rise to the surface at unexpected moment in this concerting strength. When once they are totally eradicated on attaining arahantship, one stream of consciousness get perfectly purified. Attachment and hatred, coupled with ignorance, are the chief causes of all evil prevalence in this deluded world. The enemy of the whole world is lust, through which all evil comes to living beings. This lust, when obstructed by some cause, is transformed into wretch. One is either attached to desirable external object or is repulsed with aversion in the case of undesirable object. Through attachment, one clings to materialistic or material pleasure and tries to gratify one's desire by some means or other. Through aversion, one recoils from undesirable object and even goes to the extent of destroying them, as their very presence is a source of irritation. With the giving up of egoism by one's own intuitive insight or wisdom, both attachment and hatred automatically get rooted out. They use the word disappear, not so good. So the Dhammapada verse 251 also very good. There is no fire like lust, no grips like hate. There is no net like delusion, no river like craving. As one transcends the spiritual ladder, one renounces by degree both gross and subtle attachment to materialistic pleasure, like grown-up children giving up their petty toys. Being children, they cannot be expected to possess an adultery understanding, and they cannot be convinced of the worthlessness of their temporary pleasure. With maturity, they begin to understand things as they are, and they voluntarily give up their toy. As the spiritual pilgrim proceeds on the upward path by his constant meditation and reflection, he perceives the futility of pursuing base materialistic pleasure and the resultant happiness in forsaking them. He cultivates non-attachment to the fullest degree. Happy is non-attachment in this world. So is the transcending of all sensual pleasure, is one of the earliest utterances of the Buddha. So this statement is very true. Happy is unattachment in this world. The other most rebellious passion is anger, aversion, ill will, and hatred, all of which are implied by the Pali term for pada. It consumes the person in which it springs and consumes others as well. The Pali word avapada literally means non-enmity, correspond to that most beautiful virtue of metta, which means loving kindness or goodwill towards all without any distinction. He whose mind is full of loving kindness can harbor no hatred towards anyone. Like a mother who makes no difference between herself and her only child, and protects it even at the risk of her own life, even so does the spiritual pilgrim who follows this middle path radiate his thought of loving kindness, identify himself with it. Buddhist metta embraces all living beings, animals not excluded. Avihimsa or karuna, harmlessness or compassion, is the third and the last member of sankappa. So karuna is that sweet virtue which makes the tender heart of the noble quail of at the suffering of others. This is harmlessness and compassion. Eh? Like Buddhist metta, Buddhist karuna too is limitless. It is not restricted only to the co-religious or co-national or to human being alone. Limited compassion is not true karuna. A compassionate one is as soft as a flower. He cannot bear the suffering of others. He might at times even go to the extent of sacrificing his own life to elevate the suffering of others. In every Jataka story, it is evident that the Bodhisattva endeavors his best to help the distressed and the fallen, and to promote their happiness in every possible way. Karuna has the characteristic of a loving mother whose thought, words, and deeds always tends to relieve the distress of her sick child. It has the property of not being able to tolerate the suffering of others. Its manifestation is perfect non-violence and harmlessness. That is, a compassionate person appears to be absolutely non-violent and harmless. The sight of a helpless state of the distress is the proximate cause of the practice of karuna. The consummate of karuna is the eradication of all form of cruelty. The direct enemy of karuna is cruelty, and the indirect enemy is homely grief. Buddhist metta appeals to both the rich and the poor, for Buddhism teaches its follower to elevate the lowly, help the poor, the needy, and the forlorn, tend to the sick, comfort the bereaved, pity the wretched, the wicked, and enlighten the ignorant. Compassion forms a fundamental principle of both Buddhist layman and bhikkhu. Speaking of Buddhist harmlessness, Aldous Huxley said or writes, Indian pacifism finds its complete expression in the teaching of the Buddha. Buddha teaches ahimsa or harmlessness towards all beings. He forbids even lay people to have anything to do with the manufacture and sales of arms, with the making of poison and intoxicant, with soldiering, or the slaughtering of animals. The Buddha advises his disciples thus, Wherefore, O bhikkhu, however man may speak concerning you, whether in season or out of season, whether appropriately or inappropriately, whether courteously or rudely, whether wisely or foolishly, whether kindly or maliciously, thus, O bhikkhu, must you train yourself. Unsell shall our mind remain, neither shall evil words escape our lips. Kind and compassionate ever shall we abide, with hearts harboring no ill will. And we shall enfold those very persons with stream of loving thoughts, unfailing, and forth from them proceeding we shall radiate the whole wide world with constant thought of loving kindness, ample, expanding, measureless, free from enmity, free from ill will, thus must you train yourself. He whose mind is free from selfish desire, hatred, and cruelty, and is saturated with the spirit of selflessness, loving-kindness, and harmlessness, lives in perfect peace. He is indeed a blessing to himself and others. Right thought leads to right speech. The third factor, it deals with restraint from falsehood, slandering, harsh word, and frivolous speech. He who tries to eradicate selfish desire cannot indulge in uttering falsehood or in slandering for any selfish end or purpose. He is truthful and trustworthy and ever seek the good and beautiful in others instead of deceiving, defaming, denouncing, and disuniting his own fellow beings. A harmless mind that generates loving kindness cannot give vent to harsh speech, which first debases the speaker and then hurt others. What he utters is not only true, sweet, and pleasant, but also useful, fruitful, and beneficial. Yeah? Then we continue with right speech, followed by right action, which deal with abstaining from killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct. So these three evil deeds are caused by craving and anger coupled with ignorance. With the gradual elimination of these causes from the mind of the spiritual pilgrim, blameworthy tendency arises. Arising therefrom will find no expression. Under no pretense would he kill or steal. Be pure in mind, he would lead a pure life. So these are all beautiful, noble, eightfold path factors. Eh? Okay, another three pages. I go through quickly. So purifying thoughts, words, and deeds. At the onset, the spiritual pilgrim tried to purify his livelihood by refraining from the five kinds of trade. So this one you can read through. Eh? Trading in arms, trading in human trafficking, flesh, that is breeding animals for slaughter, intoxicant drinks, and poison. Hypocritical conduct is cited as wrong livelihood for monks. Then the four right effort, I think we have gone through. This one no need. So you can read through. Then after that, we have the right mindfulness. Right mindfulness on the four objects tends to eradicate the misconception with regards to desirability, so-called happiness and permanence, and an immortal soul, atta, immortal, good, thanks for the correction, immortal soul, atta, respectively. So this one is very useful. Actually, number 7, he wrote here wrongly, I think. Oh, correct. Right effort is closely associated with right mindfulness. It is the constant mindfulness with regards to kaya, vedana, citta, and dhamma. Then after that is samadhi. So here they use the wrong word. They use concentration. So he said right effort and right mindfulness lead to right samadhi. It's not correct. It's only right mindfulness leading to right samadhi. And it's not the one-pointedness of mind. So samadhi is the unwavering, collected and unwavering mind. So that will cover the Noble Eightfold Path. So Noble Eightfold Path can also be classified as sila, samadhi, and panya. So the path factor that they develop, for sila, they use right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Actually, right thought should be included here. Then samadhi is right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Or samadhi, not concentration. Then panya should be only right understanding and right view. So right thought you can shift it to sila. According to the order of development, sila, samadhi, and panya are the three stages of Noble Eightfold Path. strictly speaking, from the ultimate standpoint, these factors that comprise the Noble Eightfold Path signify eight mental properties, cetasikas, collectively found in the four classes of supramundane consciousness, whose object is Nibbana, Lukkhara. Lukkhara is a supramundane citta. They are Panya Indriya, faculty of wisdom, Vitaka, initial application of thought, Virati, the three abstainers, Virya, the spiritual zeal, Sati, mindfulness, and Ekagata, one-pointedness, respectively. All these factors denotes the mental attitude of the aspirant who is striving to gain his deliverance. So this one is from the text. So it's just for your info, not important. Okay, we finish. So, sadhu. So next Tuesday, PG, PG. Now all come out already. Chapter 18 onward. Oh yes, last election. That's why you can use that topic. Oh, so now they got a lot of thing about karma now. You read what you sow. So our AG also changed. So with the change in government, a lot of things change. Changing for the better. That's why when you go through life, you don't worry. No matter how hard life is, always remember, the Buddha said, it's not going to last. It's impermanent. But if you have the wisdom, immediately you are free. You understand? You don't need to wait for it to go away. It's either you understand or you don't understand. That's it. The moment you understand, you are free. That's why enlightenment is not about gradual. You understand? Not cultivate. One day you become enlightened. No. The moment you understand, you awaken, your mind free, liberate. It's as simple as that. That's why a lot of Zen masters tell you, like your palm. You flick over and you flick back. That is what enlightenment is all about. The moment you flick over, you realize the truth is the other side, the unconditioned. But when you flick back to the conditioned world, then you go back to samsara. Yeah. So understanding liberates the mind, nothing else. It's only wisdom that free you. Not all the fantastic meditation, the fantastic mind state and all those things. No, nothing to do with that. If you don't develop wisdom, your mind cannot free. Always remember, nothing else free you except wisdom. So don't be gullible. A lot of people get attracted to very, very fantastic psychic ability and what they call fantastic meditative mind state. They thought that type of special meditation is a sign of enlightenment. Do not be gullible. Without wisdom, you cannot free your mind. You will attach, you will cling, and you will get yourself entangled. Only freedom will free you. Okay, we will now do the sharing of merits. Then we can make aspiration. Okay, let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed over the last 2 to 3 hours. Then we shall delegate and transfer and share all these merits with all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata ca bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakantu lokasasana. Ittawata jamihi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang venya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang venya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang venya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo Imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu
Yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Queen Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones. Then we end.
Thank you.